From Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Good Monday morning to you. Thank you for being with us. We do appreciate it. Text line 251-343-0106. Coming up on the program, tentatively, State Representative Shane Stringer in about a half hour, I believe. We haven't gone through the usual confirmation protocol, but I assume he'll be with us in about a half hour. Derek Chin in the 10 o'clock hour, running for state auditor. He has been really out and about, and he announced his candidacy on this show. But if there was the guy who was really like trying to, I guess, mimic the John Merrill, the former Secretary of State, it seems to be Derek Chin, because at every political event, everything around the state, he's posted it to social media. So he's pounded the pavement, and I guess that's what you got to do to win this office. It's not one that is necessarily as coveted as the others, but kind of interesting. I will talk to him in the 10 o'clock hour. Then in the 11 o'clock hour, the official Democrat response of the Jeff Poor Show, Parker Griffith. You got to have one guy like that on the program, right? So that's coming up in at 11 o'clock hour. Once again, text line 251-343-0106. No, Hira news here. I'm sorry to report, but we'll work on improving that. Guys, how you weathering the shutdown? 5 days into it? It's pretty rough out there, ain't it? Yeah, I know. Just chaos in the streets. We'll have to resort to cannibalism. It's just I don't see how we ever got by without the federal government. This is a remarkable moment in American history. It just shows you the resilience of the American people to make it another day, another minute, another hour without the federal government fully functioning. We'll look back at this moment in history, just like we have with the others, and wonder why we're not being called the greatest generation with this hardship. So that still seems to be a media narrative. And I know it's like, well, wait about a month from now if the government still shut down, and see if you see who's getting hurt. But, you watch the news and especially the Sunday shows yesterday. That's what they wanted to talk about. But I don't think it's, I think the approach is this. Gee, I wonder why Americans don't really care about this. Why aren't Americans more irate about this? So that cuts two ways, though. And maybe it's by a design here. Let me explain. You wanted the Democrats to take the fall here if you're a Republican for this. But as it turns out, the Democrats really are going to take credit or blame or whatever you want to call it. Because they're the ones who are, fighting the big bad orange man. Then you don't want it to seem like as big of a deal. And, you know, you wonder, because these media guys, they sit around, they overthink all of this. So Americans don't seem as frustrated with the shutdown as maybe they, at least the perception that's being created. Maybe they are just as frustrated as ever, but we're not hearing it. Instead, it's this federal judge trying to block federal troops in Portland. It's just chaos outside this ICE facility up there. That's going to get, obviously, knocked down, I believe. I think it gets knocked down at the appellate level. Here's the other thing that bothers me about this time, this moment in history, is that we ought to become like federal experts of the federal judiciary. And now you realize like why these lower court judges, these appointments are so important. They're for life. And you have liberal judges. And you're, you know, Trump's winning percentage at the appellate level is pretty good right now. It's certainly not at the appellate level at the Supreme Court. He's taking some L's, but he's taking more W's than L's. And it really does underscore the problem with the lower court judges. Activist judges. It's a real thing. And they're kind of isolated, I think, from the public. I mean, if you're a lower court judge, if you're a trial court judge, federal level, in Oregon, you're probably not watching much Newsmax, okay? It's probably a lot of NPR. I don't know what, but you see what I'm saying? And you get in this, you live in this alternate reality. And it's always been a problem for the West Coast anyway, because, I mean, you go out there and it sometimes doesn't even feel like they're a part of the country. They act that way. And there's a lot of people out there. And the culture there, with these activists, apparently there's a lot more people with spare time in Portland, Oregon than in Mobile, Alabama. Well, I would say the West Coast in general, to protest, to riot, because it always seems a little more violent. Just, you know, there's some shades of violence on the West Coast. Also, Chicago. Pritzker, he's running for president, and I think a lot of this with him playing tough guy is just playing to a 2028 presidential cycle. You Democrats out there, does J.B. Pritzker really do it for you? Is that where the excitement is? Is that where the heartbeat of the Democratic Party, you're going to see this guy and you go, wow, this is Barack Obama 2.0. This is who I want in the Oval Office. There is no way the Illinois governor is going to get elected, more or less going to win the Democratic nomination. I just don't believe that. I think if you have even AOC on the ballot, she beats him pretty handily. And he has to, like, overdo it to draw attention to himself. So he's on. The other question, another thing is, like, this guy's on TV a lot. Is the governor from, like, Wisconsin, Indiana, Ohio, Iowa? I know Chicago's got Illinois's got a major American city in Chicago. But we got, like, too much J.B. Pritzker in our lives. There's no reason any of us should know who the governor of Illinois is. He's not out there talking about his home state. He's out there bashing Trump. Do you know who his predecessor was? No, you don't. So maybe he is the pseudo-establishment guy. I mean, Gavin Newsom would beat him. So I feel like he's being forced upon you Democrat primary voters. I think that's who they want to make their guy. But the problem they have is their activist wing doesn't. No. That's not the kind of guy they're going to elect in the Democratic Party. See, D.I. Texter, I don't care about his business accolades. It doesn't matter to me. Look at this guy. That's who the heartbeat of your party is. That's who you're getting excited about. You got to put a J.B. Pritzker sign in your front yard, D.I. Texter? Is that the young, does that represent the young millennial Gen Z voter that you are courting, that is that emblematic of the modern Democratic Party right there? That guy? Is that presidential to you? Not to get too into the Texas early, but D.I. Texter writes, he's a far more successful businessman than Mango Mussolini. Well, so what? Is that who you want as a standard bearer of your party? That you're going to ride that horse into 2028, that's who's going to win? Is that who you're getting excited about, DEI Texter? Tell me. I just want to know. Do you think he can win the Democratic Party's nomination? Yeah, here it is. Here's what's going on with this guy. He's on every Sunday show. He's on primetime cable news. He's being heralded. And I don't even know what his message is, that Trump is bad and elect me and we can be more like the South Side of Chicago across the United States of America. But yet, this is who your party, the party elders, the people who write checks to whatever. This is who they want. Because here's the dirty little secret. They want favorable climates for whatever their grift is, whatever their business is. And Pritzker will pay lip service to the liberal ideology, but he's one of them. He says what he says, but you don't really believe it. Wink, wink, nod, nod. He's just a Democrat establishment toady. And this is who the party elders want. This is who Wall Street probably wants. Look, guys, now we like our guys on the left. We like the squad. We like Jay Jones, the Attorney General of Virginia, but we know that those guys can never really, really run this country. We need an adult. And this guy checks both those boxes. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the
Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. 0106. Good morning, Jet. Just wanted to say the funniest thing I heard this week. It was Todd Stacey calling Scott Harris the most trusted voice at Alabama Medicine. Yeah, I know. he was on Capital Journal, and I skimmed the transcript. I watched Donnie Chastain actually on that show. It was interesting. Calling out the HSAA. Say they're going to turn into being an irrelevant institution, just like the NCAA with NIL at this speed. Well, yeah, the Department of Public Health, after a few years of not being able to go like 5 miles without seeing some kind of advertisement or hearing it on the radio or, you know, going to a sporting event, now that the federal money's dried up, they're really whining over there about the federal cuts. That's just the thing. Like, guys, you overreach the federal or the government healthcare establishment, got a big influx of cash, it was wasteful. And this is the equal yet opposite reaction here is, well, let's cut this. What do we get out of this? Vaccinate, don't hesitate, or whatever their sloganeering was. No, but that is great. DEI texture adds, I'm a Democrat, but I'd vote for a ham sandwich over MAGA, and said, ask Griffith if you want to know what a Democrat thinks. DEI texture, to say that you're not a Democrat, what's the last Republican you voted for? Bro, you are a Democrat. I don't know why you why you downplayed those credentials. You're certainly not a Republican. I'm an independent. Like, no, you're not. Look, you don't get to be a liberal and claim independent status as if that's some kind of like credential to your intellectual capabilities. You're a Democrat, okay? That's what these people, I'm an independent. And that, you know, you're not. Will Pritzker be reelected governor of Illinois on November 3rd? I would assume. I don't know. Let's go. I haven't heard anything about that. It's all Virginia, New Jersey. Boy, Fox is really pushing this Citarelli guy. I don't know. See, Jason, Jeff, nice job by the 18-19 team on MLK story. Hopefully everyone checks that out and sees what a fraud MLK was, and the inner city nationwide are still suffering due to his lies. Well, I think there's a balance there. We tend to lionize, well, we obviously have lionized him and history, but there's good and there's bad. 251-343-0106, that's the text line if you want to be in touch with the program. Montgomery shooting on Saturday night. And they're calling it a mass shooting, which I guess is a technically true, but it was a shootout. It was a shootout between two rivals. And Stephen Reed, who had been dodging a lot of pitfalls, because this city's not generally not safe. Crime is rampant in Montgomery. You got to be real careful parking your car on the street at night there, and that it won't get stolen. It's not a safe place at all. But he's got problems, and I think with that shooting, there's going to be a reaction there. The state will do something, I hope. 251-343-0106. I'll be right back. This is the Jeff Force Show on FM Talk 106.5.
take it on down from Muscle Shoals through Decatur. Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. If you need to be in touch, be your show host. We will connect on the text. So I've got a few texts to get to here. I seem to recall, I can't remember if Representative Stringer had was going to be on or he was out. So it's been a few weeks since we last had him on. Anyway, so he will, doesn't seem to be answering his phone. We will proceed forward here. Derek Chin will be with the state auditor candidate Parker Griffith at the 11 o'clock hour. Will make a time for us as well. Let's roll through some text here. DEI texture. Nikki Haley, Katie Britt, Kay Ivey. What else do you want to know? Well, you voted for Nikki Haley. Did you really? Did you really vote in the Republican primary there, DEI texture? Katie Britt. Well, I guess if your choices were Mo Brooks and Katie Britt, I could see you doing that. And Kay Ivey, I'm sorry, she didn't really have a primary opponent. I mean, a general election opponent in 2022. Yolanda Flowers was not a a serious opponent. But I bet you voted for way more Democrats than you have Republicans, DEI texter. Name texture writes this: well, I'm no Democrat nor Republican. Fault for all parties in the United States taking civil liberties and, for example, kneeling and being censored on what you can because you gets butt hurt as a joke. I love the video of him and his colleagues wear the sombreros. I'm not sure what that Eric from Locksley is trying to convey there. Give that another shot, buddy. Leo, morning, Jeff. I'd be interested in hearing about your wife's opinion on the activist judges due to her line of work. I mean, my wife is further to the right than I am. Yeah, I know that sounds crazy. So I met her working at, the Daily Caller, back in like 2011. So we come from that same world of conservative journalism. But she's not a fan. I mean, she talks about it. The thing about being a lawyer and kind of away from this space of opinion, leading or whatever you want to call what we do here. They don't really fit together unless you want to be like a TV lawyer, I suppose. There's a lot of people like that who do go on and offer analysis, but, she's moved on from that world. But just imagine it's Leo. It's way more. Now she tries a lot of cases in federal court. A lot of appellate work. Knows the 11th Circuit real well. But there's, this is the kind of interesting when we talk about it. You know who the judges are who have a lot of their rulings overturned on appeal. And I guess that's like a stain on your record. When you have you hand down a decision and it gets overturned on a regular basis. So they try to avoid that. So like a good legal strategy at the trial court level is to really hone in on that. But then I suspect some of these judges on the left coast out there don't care at the, you know, and then you have the Ninth Circuit which historically has been a left of center court. It's just the culture, even when you have Republican presidents, they still take a lot of their advice from the senior U.S. senator from those states who, I mean, it's been a while since we've had Republican U.S. senators in Washington State, Oregon, or California. Very rare. But that sort of lends itself to the culture of the federal courts out there, which tend to be a little out of the mainstream, at least out of step with most of the country. And that's why the Supreme Court overturns a lot of Ninth Circuit decisions. Ilana Flowers is back for the 2026 primary, too. The ADP is a giant dumpster fire. I keep hearing, when I talk to my handful of Democrat friends who are plugged in, besides Parker Griffith, by the way, I hear Doug Jones' name a lot. And they really believe this. They really think that they can get Tuberville kicked off the ballot. And I said this, well, there's no way the Alabama Supreme Court is going to hear this case or rule on this case against Tuberville. And some of them believe this, that the entire Alabama Supreme Court will recuse itself, which I do not believe. But Democrats, very prominent Democrats in the state, believe that they can get, if you don't have a Yolanda Flowers, who's kind of kooky, on the top of the ballot running for governor, if you have Doug Jones, then you could get him in on a technicality. They really believe that Tommy Tuberville will fail the residency requirement. I know. I can't see that. And maybe it's this, you're kind of holding your fire. The Democratic Party in this state, let's you know, look at what they got. They don't have the numbers, but they have, if you put Joe Reed and the ADP aside, or the, what was it, the caucus he has, it kind of runs the Alabama Democratic Party, and that chaos and turmoil there. They have a few favorable media outlets. And I don't understand why you don't see more AL.com stories about what Democrats in the state want. Instead, it's just bashing Trump and Trump bad, or Alabama Republican voters are bad. Why more is not being made with AL.com, The Reflector, Political Reporter, those guys? Because I think at some point, I mean, people will tune it out, but at some point it will break through. You will land a blow, potentially. And I think you will maybe win. You won't win the war. It's a long way from having the ability to win the war if you're a Democrat in Alabama, but you could win some battles. I mean, they did it with Maryland Lands. Obviously, Doug Jones, it's those kinds of victories, and it boosts their morale and helps their fundraising. But you never see the media really get involved until the very late moments, like they did with Maryland Lands up in North Alabama for the old Mike Ball seat. So you wonder here, well, why aren't they just like blowing Tuberville up? He is the heir apparent, soon to be coronated governor. Why isn't the center-left media in this state making a bigger deal out of the residency? And all I can figure is they think they're going to have a last-minute ambush and get him on the residency requirement. that Tommy Tuberville had maintained a residence in Florida. I know that John Sharp did a story about this, but he sort of debunked that when the oppo that was being sort of peddled was that he had two homestead exemptions. Tommy Tuberville did, one in Florida, one in Alabama. And then what had happened when it was analyzed a little closely, that in Florida, when you buy property, you inherit the homestead exemption of the previous owner for the rest of the year. So for a moment in time, Tommy Tuberville had two homestead exemptions because he bought a second piece of property in, Walton County down at the beach. He already had one home down there. But he's been senator for 6 years, and he ran for more than a year as senator. I think he gets the seven-year requirement. The A.J. McCarron question is not as clear. If A.J. McCarron is to run for lieutenant governor, Where did he pay taxes? Where was he registered to vote? So these residency questions are kind of interesting, but who would have thought that this, 10, 20 years ago would have been an issue that we would, look at electing folks from this space, from this world. The football world, which is transient, right? If you're at that level, at the college upper echelon level of coaching or in professional football, even if it's the UFL. But there's no question to me, these guys have had at least 7 years, and especially A.J. McCarron, who went to high school or grew up here and went to the University of Alabama. And because he moved away for a time to play professional football, that you're going to disqualify him. Tuberville from Arkansas, it's less, but if you win the Tuberville case, the A.J. McCarron case seems like it would take care of itself. But they really believe that they're going, Democrats, very smart people, talk to them all the time, really think that this is how that's going to play out. Back to Montgomery, I was hoping to get Representative Stringer on to talk a little bit about what we saw on Saturday night. But the shootout, which, guys, I think this, and I know this is kind of in the weeds or the semantic game, but look, they're calling it a mass shooting, and it's gotten coverage, but the idea of a mass shooting in your mind is what? Some guy shows up and just starts spraying bullets. And this really wasn't what that was. This was a skirmish. This was crime. These are criminal elements. This wasn't like a lone wolf thing or some guy, some disgruntled 20-something went and got his daddy's AR-15 or whatever and decided to go shooting people. This was a beef. And I was just kind of thinking about that. Is that the way they want to categorize this? Not as gang violence. Not as a problem, an underlying problem of the city, but mass shooting. Well, what do we think of mass shootings? And it's, all these tragedies politicized. Or is that just what we're going to call it, a mass shooting, just for the sake of, gun statistics? That more kids die from guns than crayons or whatever it was. Something like that. So the day after reaction, kind of interesting. Steve Marshall running for U.S. Senate Attorney General, who we'll probably get on this program sometime this week to talk about it. Really, really just going aggressively at Stephen Reed. Stephen Reed, I still think that's a problem with this. Let's see, I'll read you a statement real quick. Quote, my deep sympathies are extended to the victims and families of those affected by the senseless violence that took place in downtown Montgomery last night. These events underscore once again that our capital city is in crisis. Though the blame lies with those who carelessly pulled the triggers, I continued to be troubled by the city's leadership, stubborn refusal to acknowledge they have a serious problem. While I believe the local law enforcement is doing the best it can, the people of Montgomery deserve leaders who are competent, accountable, and committed to restoring law and order. As a resident of Montgomery myself, I remain committed to our efforts to turn the city around and to revisiting the conversation about the state's authority over the Capitol. And it gets back to this, right? That you want a functioning state government, whether you like it or not. You got to have safe. You got to have safe spaces. You got to have safe places for that to function. We'll get to the other side. I'll give you. Mayor Reed decided late yesterday to clap back at General Marshall. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Crazy. I'm getting hammered, sitting right here at the floor of Bama. At the floor of Bama.
I fly a starship across the universe divide. And when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can. Perhaps I may become a highwayman again.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. Tony writes, I believe that a mass shooting is defined with four or more people shot or wounded. So there were two dead and 12 wounded. I guess it meets that category, but it really wasn't a mass shooting in our what you conceive it to be. So when you see the headlines on like the Associated Press, you see a mass shooting leaves two people dead and 12 wounded. It's not as if someone was out in the parking lot of a Catholic school shooting through the windows. You know what I mean? The real gist of this would have been a gang shootout in downtown Montgomery in the entertainment district there. 251-343-0106. Back to this, though. Reed, why Stephen Reed is talking to the media like this, I don't know, but he says, quote, if the attorney general ever wants to talk with me about what we're doing, I'd be more than happy to sit with him and I'll go to him, tell him exactly what we're doing. But I don't need anybody lecturing me about crime. Clearly you do, Mayor Reed. Clearly you do need somebody lecturing you about crime because you're not really getting the job done. And this goes back to the Atlanta Highway drive-by, and now this. And then he continues, and these people last night will never forget what happened to them. I don't need that kind of sideline commentary from the state's top law enforcement official. You don't need it. Well, you need something. You need some kind of commentary. So KIV come out this morning. Mike Kaysen from AL.com writes, I've asked my Elias Secretary Hal Taylor to extend patrol area for our Capitol troopers to include key downtown areas. I will plan on asking the legislature to support more additional resources to allow our state law enforcement presence to be more effective in downtown Montgomery. We will also continue to discuss how we can work better with Montgomery City and County law enforcement to ensure a zero tolerance for crime in Montgomery. Let me be clear, all available state assets are being discussed and all options are made on the table. Montgomery is a special place filled with history, great potential, and a strong community of people. There's too much at stake here, and I'm a longtime resident of Montgomery myself. I cannot allow this to continue. Well, and I, you know, this is something that's probably overdue. But just remember this. This is not no unimportant detail that the rest of the state here is going to have to bankroll this. We're going to have to subsidize the inept mayor of Montgomery's inability to keep crime down in his own city. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Somehow on and on I go. I keep on rolling with the flow. Folks said that I...
From Buck's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between, an insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning. Text line is always 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the show, just text me. And I'll do my best to respond. No promises that it'll be, you know, that A-list quality commentary that you're hoping for, but we strive for that. Still to come on the program about 30 minutes from now. Derek Chin, he is running for state auditor to fill the void left by Andrew Sorrell. Andrew Sorrell seeking the Secretary of State seat. He was on the show on Friday. We're going to get Caroline Dobson on probably here in the next couple of days, hopefully, but we'll work on that. A little bit later. Also on the program, Parker Griffith will be with us. Ultra Runner writing in the spirit of Parker Griffith. I enjoy Parker segments for two reasons. They are humorously entertaining and they provide insight that Sun Tzu valued, the knowledge of your opponent. What about adding a younger, honest Democrat lawmaker to give their thoughts? Well, and I've tried. It's just hard. There's not really the younger Democrat lawmakers. They'll come on when you ask, but they don't want to be on regularly, a lot of them. If you are a lawmaker, if you are the Alabama legislature and have a D next to your name, we will make time for you as regularly, at least weekly even, if you so desire. I'm fully supportive of that. It's just you find a reluctance to go on conservative talk radio. And even when I've asked some of these lawmakers, they just ignore my text, a lot of them. Some of them will. Philip Insler, who's leaving legislature, he would. Anthony Daniels has been very good to this program over the years, the leader. Every now and then we'll get, and he's not a young guy at all, Billy Beasley, the Democrat state senator out in East Alabama. He's got Phoenix City, Eufaula, Tuskegee. He always says yes to come on, but there's, it was either, we're talking prisons or we're talking pharmacies. Yeah, and I think we've had Marika Coleman Madison on once. And I guess it Barbara Drummond, she came on for the day of the general election, but we didn't really talk about state politics. Has anybody heard from Representative Drummond? As Todd said, he's glad she stayed in the legislature. Hey, the AEA gave a bunch of money to her mayoral campaign, and while they didn't get their hoped-for result, they have an ally on the Education Policy Committee in Barbara Drummond. $100,000. No, but and there's also, to answer your question, Ultra Runner, there's not a lot of young guys who are Democrats in the Alabama legislature. We've had Chris England on a few times over the years. And he's an interesting guy. He gave it his best effort, I feel like, to be chairman of the Democratic Party in this state. But if you don't have Joe Reed's coalition nailed down, it's a hopeless endeavor. We used to have Doug Jones all the time when he was a U.S. senator, and I suspect if he does run for governor, we'll start hearing from him again. But also, we have lots of Republican lawmakers who were once upon a time Democrats. Used to be Democrats. Does that count? I guess they're not young either. But Parker Griffith is a Democrat who always says yes and never turns the program down. 251-343-0106 if you want to be in touch with the program. But the back and forth between Marshall, Reed, now Ivy's in the mix. Maybe we need to hear from some lawmakers here in the law enforcement. And we need, you know, Reed Ingram and guys like that to come on to talk about this. But Ivy took the National Guard off the table. And now I guess it's back on based on the reporting there from Mike Kaysen. Yeah, I'm looking at my press missives from Governor Ivy, and all I have is Ivy to host Beat Auburn, Beat Hunger, and Beat Bama Food Drive kickoff. So I guess this is an appearance announcement. But she's like giving the AL.com, that's what she's telling them about the mass shooting. Well, what is the appropriate state response? Because if the state has to do something, it needs to be decisive. Number one, it needs to be decisive just to stop the criminal element, the primary objective. That needs to be obviously very important, but I think also important as well would be you need to send a message to these cities, to these mayors, particularly Birmingham and Montgomery, that if you're not making public safety a priority, and I don't think the mayor of Montgomery is. I think he's got his eyes on other things. I'm going to talk about that. You know, then this is what's going to happen. This is sort of the repercussions. You don't like the state coming in, taking over your police force. You don't want to see that. You don't want state involvement. You don't want the state of Alabama telling your police chief what to do. Well, get your act together. And it also sends the message to other cities in this state that you need to get your act together too, or this could happen to you. We can't have a state capital with the seat of power that's constantly in a barrage of gunfire, where RSA buildings are having their windows shot out. Well, we need to round up all the guns. Well, no, you can't do that. We have a Second Amendment in this country. What you have in Montgomery, and I don't know why no one says this, is like, look, they don't respect law enforcement. They're not worried about the penalties. The criminal element isn't. They know the justice and doesn't move quite like it does in other places. Law enforcement doesn't react. They don't have the resources. You have a criminal element that knows the politics are stacked against the local law enforcement. And they take advantage of that situation. You've got to send a message. You got to say this can't happen. 251-343-0106, Haywood. Why does Figures not come on? I don't know. He had said that he was interested when he got right after he got sworn in, and it just hasn't happened. He's welcome on this program. He came on one time during the campaign, and it wasn't even it was this. They were at the DNC in Chicago, and I had asked Don Siegelman to come on, who, by the way, is another Democrat we'll have on from time to time. But I asked Don Siegelman to come on and kind of talk about things, and he just handed the phone over to Shamari Figures. And we got 5 minutes with him. We don't need to hear anything from Maxine Waters Drummond. I don't think she's that. I think she made a tactical error not running to the middle and running to the left instead. I bet you she would have come. She could have swung that election if she hadn't have done this, if she hadn't have gone far left. I know it's like Monday morning quarterback here, but she went after Spiro Chiragotis for apparently being too MAGA, and she did this parade of left-wing figures, Cory Booker and Kamala Harris and all these people who were backing her campaign, these National Democrats. She had those voters already. What she needed was to peel off just enough voters in Midtown and Spring Hill and present herself as a moderate Democrat. And she could have made this a lot closer. But the messaging to me with that was off. Now, look, I'm going to say this about it. It was a lot closer than I thought it was going to be. And I thought she did a really good job. But that's, you know, second place is first loser, to quote the late Dale Earnhardt. But she gained a lot of ground. She had a much better showing in that runoff than she did in the general election. But if I'm running in Mobile as a Democrat, I'm not running hard left. Not with what's going on in the country right now. I mean, especially you look at a major American cities and you see these far left mayors and it's chaos. Where's a place in America right now with a mayor who identifies sort of far left, socialist or communist or whatever they say they are, that gets elected and that city is like a livable place? Parker is always good for the farm and weather report from North Alabama, writes a texter. Mike, I also appreciate Parker. And no, he claims to be a Democrat. He just strikes me as a Bill Clinton Democrat who in today's climate would be considered right. Heck, Clinton was further to the right than most R's in the Senate and would have made Meemaw look like a far left, a big government socialist. Well, he was a political animal. He knew where he needed to be. And right now, the problem for Democrats, and we talked about this at length, and we talked about this on this show this morning with the way they're pushing J.B. Pritzker. You have sort of a very robust, very enthusiastic activist base that has commandeered the party. Any of these party elders who are trying to still manage that. And they it's too clever by half when they make all of a sudden Joe Biden the 2020 nominee. And then when it becomes clear that Joe Biden isn't going to be the nominee in 24, I mean, you just anoint the Vice President Kamala Harris. Where what would have happened if in 24 we had a real Democratic Party primary? What would that have looked like? Do we think Democrats would have elected Kamala Harris to be the nominee? And she would have had to done a lot of work and go to Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, Nevada. She would have had to run. And it probably would have given them a little bit better chance. But I'm not convinced that she would have been the lock to be the nominee unless. And you can go back, guys, to even the 2016 election and look at the way the Democratic Party under Debbie Wasserman Schultz handled that primary. Having the Democrat debates at like 11 o'clock on a Saturday. You have this apparatus in the modern Democratic Party that wants to pick the nominee and not leave it up to that robust activist base that would, you know, put an AOC at the top of the ticket. They know that's what they're dealing with, and they've held it off for a long time, and it's going to come to a head at some point. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. Silicon Derek Chin, that's in the next segment. And then Parker Griffith in the 11 o'clock hour. Let's see here. A named texter writes, when she aligned herself with Kamala, Cory Booker, and Hakeem, the dream, it turned some people off. And I mean, it's okay. You're trying to get to win. Here's all I could figure. A name text her when she did that. I mean, there may have been a fundraising component to it. If you're telling your donors, if you're Hakeem Jeffries, if you're Cory Booker, if you're Kamala Harris or any other prominent national Democrat, you have, you know, hey, I sure would like it if you would help out Barbara Drummond down in Mobile. Perhaps that's the expectation, that you go out and sing their praises. So imagine this, guys, if Spiro had gotten the endorsement of like J.D. Vance and Steve Bannon and Roy Moore. I mean, he's not going to, I think he would have said thank you and then moved on. But I think that's that did her in a little by going hard left at the very, very end. To her base. She almost won it, and I would have been wrong. And I really thought it was going to be more like a 4 or 5 point win for Spiro, not a 1.5 point win. But I still think she left a lot on the table there. Unnamed texture. So I'm going to poll in Illinois to vote for governor, which Pritzker do I vote for? Which Pritzker do I vote for? Which Pritzker Chin do I vote for? Okay, I got you. No one really likes Gavin Newsom. He just kind of comes off as your typical oiled up politician. I don't think AOC can win a national election. She's too radical. Who else is out there? Rahm Emanuel, maybe, who's maybe doing it right. But J.B. Pritzker clearly running for president. I believe you just look at it and you think, though, who is excited? Who's getting up on Election Day 2028, like, fired up about J.B. Pritzker? Now, clearly enough people in the state of Illinois were fired up about J.B. Pritzker. To be elected governor, but that's an odd state. It's Chicago and everything else, and Chicago is like 10-1 everything else. Who's excited about him nationally? And he just doesn't have that kind of charisma. He doesn't have the enthusiasm. I don't believe. Does he win these blue wall states? Maybe that's their angle here. Well, he could win Wisconsin. He's, you know, and he could win Michigan. They're real close to Illinois. Is state of Pennsylvania like, yeah, bring me more. Make Philadelphia Chicago. Make Pittsburgh Chicago. Probably not. He's got deep pockets and he seems to be who they're propping up, who they're putting out there as the Trump criticizer in chief. That's the aim here. I know that the National Guard being deployed in Chicago makes it a national story, makes him a national figure. But he's been coming on and doing regular media appearances long before the Trump administration said, hey, we need to go in and debug the Chicago, south side of Chicago criminal element. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Flores Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Carry on, sweet southern comfort, carry on.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. Text line, you need to be in touch with me, your show host, 251-343-0106. Hit us up on that text line, and we'll do our best to respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. So look, I'm on the program about an hour from now. Parker Griffith, the official Democrat response of the Jeff Porter Show. That's coming up in, like I said, an hour. Joining us now, however, he is a Republican candidate for state auditor. Always a pleasure to bring on Derek Chin to the show. Derek, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jeff. How are you? Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, thanks for making time. Well, I guess first off, congratulations on the Alpha endorsement. Talk a little bit about you've really kind of, I think, established yourself here in the last few months as the front runner.
Thank you so much, Jeff. I really appreciate it. Yeah, you know, I've just really enjoyed the opportunity and the privilege to travel all across the state of Alabama, visiting with the Farmers Federations across the state. You know, the Alabama Farmers Federation has 67 county federation chapters, and it was just really a privilege to get to travel across to so many counties and meet with the farming families across Alabama, and I'm really grateful for their support, and I'm really grateful for their endorsement.
Yeah, well, you didn't get it by just being there. You had to go to all of these meetings all over the state, and then I guess you got to give a speech to the farmers the other day at their gathering. But that's really what it's been like, it seems like, just kind of following you from before on social media. Just putting in the miles on the car and pounding the shoe leather.
Absolutely. You know, the Farmers Federation is really a grassroots organization. It's a wonderful grassroots organization. And you know, you really have to work the grassroots in order to get the support of Alpha. And I was proud to be able to do so. And I'm just so grateful to them and for all of their help and all the confidence they've placed in me and our campaign.
Well, and, you know, like I said, you've been at a lot of political events over the last several months, I suppose. But talk about that a little bit, Derek. You know, what are you hearing? I know it's a down ballot race and maybe not at the front of a lot of people's minds, but you don't go to all these places and talk to all these people and not hear things. What are you hearing out there?
Yeah, so I've had the privilege to be able to go speak to different groups across the state. Have gone the opportunity to speak to several GOP meetings. I'm actually on the road right now, headed down to Chilton County, headed down to Klan to speak to the Chilton County Republican women. And, you know, it's just really been great hearing from fellow Alabamians about the stuff that they're concerned about. You know, I think a lot of us are concerned about and frustrated with government waste, government abuse, and just seeing that the taxpayer resources may not be being spent wisely or being used properly. And it's really important that we stay on top of that and make sure that our taxpayers' resources are being spent appropriately for the benefit of the people of Alabama.
Well, now you've been, I assume, if not on your way, you will have been to all 67 counties. And talk a little bit about that. I mean, I've done a little bit of the travel around the state, kind of know the state pretty well. But when you take on one of these statewide campaigns, I mean, you get to see a lot of Alabama. And what's been your impression? What have you been shocked by?
Yeah, so I'm very close to hitting all 67 counties. I'm missing just a few, but I should be able to hit all 67 soon. My goal is by the end of the campaign to be able to hit all 67 counties twice, and I think that I'm on track to doing so. And, you know, I've just really always been a grassroots guy. I really like getting out and meeting the people and hearing about their lives and their stories and telling them about me and asking them about them and what they're concerned about. So that's really been really enjoyable for me. It's just getting to meet so many wonderful folks across our state.
Yeah, and, you know, what do you tell them? Hey, I'm running for state auditor. And if you're not familiar with that office, you're not, you know, coached up on what it is. Like, talk a little bit about, give us your sort of pocket speech here.
Sure. Yeah. You know, oftentimes when I'm on the campaign trail and I tell folks that I'm running for state auditor, folks will ask me, "We have a state auditor?" I didn't know that. And I just explain to them the duties of the office, and it's a down ballot race, but it does very important work because it guards the taxpayers' resources. So the state auditor is in charge of auditing physical state property that has a market value of $500 or greater. So anything that's physical property owned by a state agency that is worth $500 or more is kept track of by the state auditor's office. So if they, desks, computers, the sidearms used by the state troopers, so anything that's physical state property that is owned by a state agency is kept track of by the state auditor's office. And that's really important to make sure that those taxpayers' resources are being used efficiently. The state auditor also is in charge of appointing registrars in 66 of the 67 counties in Alabama. And the one county where the auditor does not get a registrar appointment is actually my home county of Jefferson County. And that's because of a quirk in the Alabama law, which provides that Jefferson County appoints their own registrar through their own process. But in all other counties in the state of Alabama, the auditor gets a registrar appointment. And the registrars are very important officials in the state of Alabama because the registrars are the only officials in our state that have the authority to add anyone to the voter rolls or remove anybody from the voter rolls. And so it's really important that we get competent and qualified folks in those positions that understand the importance of election integrity, that understand the importance of election security, and that understand that only eligible U.S. citizens who are residents of Alabama should ever, ever, ever be allowed to vote in Alabama's elections, period.
So there's the election integrity component, and then there's the government accountability component. We'll talk about the current state of the state auditor. I mean, you know, and there was a discussion maybe 5-6 years ago of just eliminating it, which I don't think that will fly with the Alabama voter here. I guess it would have to be constitutional, but it's one that's certainly had a target on it over the years. But I guess that talk's kind of died down some.
Yeah, sure. So there was talk about it several years ago. The state auditor is a constitutional position, so it's established by the Constitution of Alabama. So in order for the auditor's office to be abolished, it would have to go through both houses of the Alabama legislature, need a supermajority in both the Alabama House and the Alabama Senate, and in order to be put on the ballot for a vote of the people. And the talks of that have died down significantly. And I think that if it ever got to a vote of the people would not be for abolishing a government accountability office like the state auditor's office.
Well, should it go the other way? Like, there's so much other government, you know, that kind of oversees the accountability mechanisms, and that we have these in government, but they're not necessarily constitutional offices, but it would make more sense to put those under the state auditor's office, I think, especially some of these. I mean, here we've had here in the last few days, these stories about, you know, with some of these audits of the Department of Examiners of Public Accounts and things like that. I mean, what do you make that relationship there? Having a whole department, and it seems like it should be under the state auditor's office to me.
Sure, you know, there's lots of discussion on what duties may or may not be added to the state auditor's office. I think it's important to take a look at all of that and see what would be the most efficient use to provide government accountability for the people of Alabama. And if the people of Alabama see fit to elect me as their next state auditor in 2026, I want to be in a position where whatever the legislature assigns in terms of statutory duties for the state auditor's office, that I would be able to do so with efficiency. That I will be able to do so with competence, and that I will be able to execute the duties that are assigned by the legislature in statute.
Yeah, well, I just, you know, and there are times, Derek, and certainly Andrew Sorrell and Jim Ziegler have participated, but where they've gone to the legislature, not just for funding or their usual appropriation, but just either for more authority or more duties. What do you think? What would you like to see in that office? What would you like to see the responsibilities of the office be changed, if anything?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I think it's really important to kind of take a look at, you know, are there ways with how the duties of the office are currently being set up, how we can work with other state agencies. For example, you know, the current procedure is if there's a negligent loss of state property, the state auditor will refer that matter to the local district attorney or the attorney general's office for potential criminal prosecution. And oftentimes, you know, that just turns into a stack of paper on the desk. And I want to be able to first, you know, with the current duties that are outlined under Alabama law, to see if we can work with current other state agencies and current other agencies to be able to go after the folks that are being negligent or go after the folks that are maliciously misusing state property and holding those folks accountable first and foremost.
Yeah, because there's the accountability mechanism there. Like, once you do the audit and you say, hey, this is what we came back with and this property is missing, I mean, that's sort of where your job ends. Then
right.
Then where does it begin? Maybe you can make a referral or something to the AG's office, but
yes.
There's nothing in statute. There's nothing that says that this is necessarily actionable.
That's exactly right. There's no internal enforcement mechanism authority within the office itself.
That you just have these rules and you go about the business and then, hey, here's our audit. And, you know, and I don't know. I mean, I haven't tracked it, but I find that a lot of the audits that has been done by this office usually come back with a pretty favorably, and every now and then there will be something we'll hear about, but generally
yes.
Speaking, the state property shows up where it's supposed to.
Right. The vast majority of the instances, the state property shows up where it's supposed to. And oftentimes, if there is a couple missing pieces of state property, it will be found relatively quickly.
Joined by Derek Chin. He is the, one of the Republican candidates for the open state auditor seat, the current state auditor running for Secretary of State, Andrew Sorrell. So that opens up a vacancy. Hey, so you're making your way to Chilton County, to Clinton, for the Republican women there. But to talk a little bit about, I mean, like, here we are. We're getting into crunch time here. I know it's early October, and there's a lot of runway left. But what does the campaign look like for you from here till primary day?
Yeah, so I'm going to just keep on stay focused strong on grassroots and getting to meet as many fellow Alabamians as I possibly can. You know, I think it's really important for elected officials to get out as much as possible and ask people for their votes. You know, it's really important to me not to take anybody's vote for granted. And I want to work to earn everybody's vote. And so, you know, oftentimes you hear politicians say that, but I really do mean that. And I have been working as hard as I possibly can to go out and see as many Alabamians as possible, tell them about our campaign's platform of providing government accountability, conservative fiscal policy and conservative policy, and really talking about Alabama's values and how I want to help promote that, and just really work as hard as I possibly can to get both my message out, our campaign's message out, but also to hear from my fellow citizens in Alabama and hear about what concerns them. And so I'm really focused on doing so. I'm really enjoying doing so. And the momentum for our campaign has been outstanding. It's been amazing. And I'm just so grateful to the people of Alabama for such a warm reception everywhere I go across all of our state.
Derek, we're about out of time here, but before we let you go, folks want to get in touch with your campaign or get a website or something you can point us to.
Yeah, my campaign is Derek Chin for Alabama. You can find me on social media. You can find me on Facebook. And looking forward to connecting with folks. Campaign is Derek Chin for Alabama.
Derek, we appreciate your time. Safe travels, and we'll get you on again soon.
Thank you so much, Jeff. I really appreciate you having me on. Good talking to you, sir.
Thank you, Derek Chin, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Got to know when to hold 'em, know when to fold 'em, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on Monday morning. 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the show, all you do is text me, and we will respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. This is a good question from Paul. Has Feinbaum been fired? And I did see a Clay Travis post that they have, let's see, ESPN has reportedly removed Paul Feinbaum from network appearances amid his interest in the Senate race, per OutKick's Clay Travis. So I don't think he has been necessarily fired, but he's not showing up on like his usual SportsCenter and First Take appearances. They have not been having him on like they usually do as a regular. So SEC Network, I assume he is still showing, but his he hasn't showed up on, because he usually shows up on Sunday morning on SportsCenter and kind of gives a recap of college football. And then was on First Take on Monday mornings and hasn't isn't on. There's something going on there, but they haven't done much. Now, he was on a podcast yesterday, one of the ESPN podcasts, but I think they are trying to limit his appearances here. And we'll find out what's going on. Hey, guys, you just don't go on the enemy's podcast. And Clay Travis is very hostile toward ESPN. Very hostile over the years. And you go on his podcast and you criticize your employer. Now, look, I think Feinbaum has a different contract. He's allowed to go on other shows. He's allowed to do that. That's what he negotiated. But ESPN, there's no contractual obligation for him to be able to go on and appear on ESPN programs. See here, Anderson writes, J.B. Pritzker is a different version of Jabba the Hutt. Yeah, but I mean, you say that jokingly, but like, who's excited to vote for that guy? What does he do for you? Well, he really sticks it to Trump. Well, Trump's not on the ballot in 28. And I tell you, I really believe that the Democratic Party establishment wants a J.B. Pritzker at the top of the ticket. They don't want one of these far-left types who have managed to get elected. For whatever reason, they don't want Gavin Newsom. I'd keep an eye on that. Watch him. There's a reason he's showing up as much as he is, and I think they're trying to promote him as a major force in the Democratic Party. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.